listening to Avasant on the Record, a podcast discussing key trends and insights into government-driven markets.
I'm August Cole. I'm the writer-in-residence at Avasant, and I'm joined today with Josh Pavlik and Brett Perry. We were just recently in Chicago for the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum annual conference. Josh, tell us a bit about the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum.
So DEF is an organization comprised of emerging leaders who are really looking to bring change and innovation to the national security sector. And really the reason why this is important now is because we're seeing a lot of changes in the national security space, in which speed in particular is important. We see technology moving fast, we see adversaries moving fast. So the idea is that speed is very important. And this group of people is really trying to find ways to do things differently, to change the status quo, and to bring more speed and innovation to the sector in light of the threats and the environment that's really changing.
I think one of the great things, too, is that by having a conference outside of Washington, it creates a place where people can put forth ideas that are unconventional and that might not get the same airtime inside the Beltway. Brett, what were some of the coolest things you saw?
So there were a lot of really interesting ideas that we saw, but one in particular that stood out is during the pitch session, one innovator discussed his idea of how he processes lighter data differently in a way that is not only faster but is oriented towards allowing the warfighter to either print out 3D maps of the using the information or using augmented reality or virtual reality to manipulate and look at the data in different ways than they're traditionally used to.
So you don't have to look at a map anymore.
Exactly. It's creating a more interactive experience for the warfighter by leveraging new types of technologies.
Well, and I think this is a great example of the type of innovation you see in the DEF community. Change really happens at the grassroots, and there's a recognition that great ideas can really come from anywhere. They can come from somebody who's enlisted. They can come from a general. They can come from somebody in the startup community. It's really a community that values ideas from all different types of people and communities.
You know, the impact that DEF is having is real. You know, you're looking at some of their inputs into the way personnel reform is being managed at that macro level. But it seems to me also the kind of place where relationships are formed that will allow people to tackle problems that if they were trying to approach on their own, they wouldn't otherwise be able to do. How do you see that kind of network effect playing out as organizations like DEF and others start to pop up and also grow?
So I think with DEF, when you compare the makeup of the conference today versus the makeup of the conference 4 years ago, you're seeing the community really broaden and include new audiences. You know, one attendee described it as the first conference as really consisting of primarily junior level officers. But when you look at the attendees today, not only did you have uniformed folks at the 0203 level, but you also had folks from the private side, from Silicon Valley type startups trying to share their lessons, as well as different elements of kind of the defense innovation landscape, like DIUX and others.
The network effect is just so important, and I think that's just one of the real values of the conference and the weekend is bringing together people from all different walks of life and people who bring different experiences to the table, and connecting those people is really at the heart of what DEF does. And, you know, there are a lot of different interesting stories that you see from people who were at the conference. You know, for example, somebody started a podcast for newly commissioned officers to share best practices. And that person shared the story and then, you know, really sparked a discussion amongst other attendees about how can we do something similar? How can we bring this sort of idea to our communities? You see people, for example, who are bringing ideas about how do we tap into the resources within the military who we typically underappreciate. So, for example, enlisted folks who often are overlooked, or we don't necessarily think about what are the experiences that they had previously in life that are really relevant to the military. So you see a lot of discussion around those sorts of issues and a real recognition that people can learn from each other. And that network effect, that collaboration, I thought was just so valuable.
There seems to be a lot of sharing of lessons learned, because there is so much purposeful experimentation that goes on within the deaf community, whether, like you said, it's starting a podcast and figuring it out almost on the fly and measuring the impact as you go along, or, you know, hearing some of the stories about how the Hacking for Defense community has been growing nationwide, you know, very much in that same sort of spirit as what DEF is promoting. You know, the narrative in all this seems to be really important as well. You know, the way we understand how we struggle against, you know, obstacles that are in our way. And many of the anecdotes, something that you've been talking about, seem to be really important. And it goes to a quote that Morgan Plummer, who was giving a summary of this F5 report, which was a personnel reform that plan that DEF helped input. He said, oftentimes the anecdote can be more powerful than the statistic for Defense Department officials. And I just think, you know, after a weekend like what you see at DEF and hear at DEF, that certainly is true.
Yeah, one of the lessons learned and discussions about how do we take ideas that are learned at DEF and apply them at your own organization was in perpetuating organizational change, you know, tapping into the emotional side of the stakeholders is critical. And that was demonstrated by that anecdote on the, you know, how important is the statistic versus how important is the story. And for some audiences, you know, understanding the story or telling a story can have a stronger impact than a statistic. So that was a very interesting lesson learned.
So walk us through your own presentation at DEF on leading organizational change, because that was really one of the thematic points of the weekend's events.
So our session really started with a look at when organizational change has worked in the past and when it hasn't. And by organizational change, for the sake of simplicity, let's just say it's really about getting people to do things that they don't want to do within an organization. And, you know, what we found is that there are certainly many examples of when organizational change has worked. There are many examples of when it hasn't. And, you know, the reality is that most times it doesn't work. So John Cotter, professor at Harvard, who's looked at this a lot, says that, you know, really over 75% of organizational change efforts don't work. So what we wanted to do was really dive into, well, what are the reasons why it doesn't work? What are the instances that have been successful on the other hand, and what's really driven that? So we had a good conversation with people really about their own experiences. And what we found is that there's really a recognition that when organizational change does work, it's because people are not, you know, as Brett said, not just tapping into the rational aspects of change. You know, they're not just presenting data, but they're really tapping into the motivations and the emotional side of what really motivates people. So, you know, that was a real revelation for our group, was that, you know, change is, you know, many times it's about the emotions, it's about people, which at the end of the day, that's organizational change, it's people.
Mm-hmm. In a group like DEF, that's, you know, that the community is comprised of, you know, really, you know, intelligent people, it was a really great learning moment for everyone, because, you know, many of these individuals have taken great ideas and have presented them, but have struggled, and it was interesting to see how they considered, well, maybe, although my argument or my idea was rationally sound, maybe I should have thought more about how does this, what emotions does this trigger when I present this idea, and how can I try to present it better in the future by thinking about the emotional aspect.
Also, I think one of the other revelations for many people in the session was that, organizational change many times doesn't work, you know, and that's okay. That's part of the process. You know, I think many times it can be very frustrating to go through an organizational change process or look for a way to drive change. And then when it doesn't work, you may get the impression that, oh, this is just, you know, I did it the wrong way, or, you know, maybe this is just never going to happen. But, you know, the reality is that's normal. And sometimes change is, you know, it's an iterative process and it takes time. And that was, I think, something that a lot of us in that room, you know, that idea was reinforced.
Yes, it really came out. Each group had a case study of either a private company trying to go through organizational change or a government agency trying to do the same. And, you know, even after the participants had, you know, learned from each other and learned more about, you know, Cotter's framework as well as the Heath brothers, with these case studies, you know, it was still it still highlighted how organizational change is hard, and it does require an iterative process because your first swing you won't get everything right. So
you constantly need to change. Who's got better odds, you think? Someone trying to implement organizational change in a big company or the Cubs winning the World Series?
Well, I'm an Indians fan, so I'm conflicted here. well, if the Cubs can do it, then anyone can do it. It may take you over 100 years. No, it's not going to take that long. it's a lengthy process, mm-hmm. but it can happen.
And it speaks to narrative, right? I mean, right. You know, sports obviously is a kind of funny way to talk about it, but even companies have their own narratives about how they evolve and change too.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think, you know, one of the things with change, and this is where this was another lesson learned with DEF, is how a lot of members in the community, they really try to fix small problems. So rather than trying to, you know, go after the biggest and the hardest problem, they step back and maybe say, okay, well, that would be great if I can solve that, but, you know, that's, you know, so much more complex. So, but what if I can solve these smaller problems? And if I'm solving a lot and a lot, they're adding up, and then with that, I could create a change as well. It was interesting to see how the Defense Digital Services they spoke, and they said, you know, we don't want to solve the big problem, but, you know, if it's something small like changing the application for Army travel costs, then that's a small problem that we'll try to fix.
That's a great point. You know, change. I think a lot of times you hear organizational change, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone. You think, oh, it has to be this this really big thing, this groundbreaking type of shift. But in reality, organizational change, and this is something the group talked about, you know, in many cases, it's the little things. You know, and like Brett talked about, you look at the Defense Digital Service, what they're doing, you know, they're going for the little wins. Hack the Pentagon was talked about, and I think that's a great example where you spend $150,000 and the number of vulnerabilities that were found just through that little, you know, small step type of program, it's really astounding. You know, so, you know, I think it's a great example of, you know, a little change or a little move that can make a big difference.
You know, another hallmark of the deaf community is the interest, but also the expertise in using human-centered design and design thinking. There were a lot of post-it notes that weekend that were used to good effect, to kind of better understand problems from you know, new perspectives. What did you think of the process?
So I think with design thinking, it was it was a great way at getting at bringing out ideas in a way that allowed everyone to contribute, as opposed to sometimes in strategic workshops, you have the loudest voice in the room that can really drive the discussion. But with human-centered design, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was how, in a group like DEF, where you have an array of experiences and backgrounds, it was a you know, great method at trying to get at boiling up the best ideas that each group was thinking of.
Yeah, and I thought the process really did a great job of focusing people on problems and doing it in a way that was fast. You know, so going back to this idea of speed, it was striking to me that the whole human-centered design process is, you know, it's meant to make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. It's meant to make you feel like you don't have enough time, and that's a great thing because sometimes, you know, if you have too much time, you're going to spin your wheels. You're going to take up the time. So I thought it was an interesting process to go through in that you were really forced to think about solutions in a, you know, a short amount of time and then come to consensus around some of the best ideas. And like Brett said, you know, it's really a way to get the best ideas to percolate up wherever they come from, not necessarily the loudest voice in the room. And I thought that was really effective.
Yeah, that ethos was something I think that ran through the weekend in terms of really being very inclusive, you know, from a conference perspective, getting as many people to actively participate. I felt like folks walked away with kind of new tools in their toolkit. For my part, you know, learning more about design thinking and being able to go through some of those exercises was a great takeaway. Tell me some more of your takeaways from the weekend before we wrap up.
So another interesting aspect that I found is, as I mentioned earlier, you had more government involvement, especially from DIUX, and it was really neat to kind of see the DIUX and the Hacking for Defense, you know, a lot of those participants there in the room sharing their experiences, because it adds, as the community broadens, it sheds some light on what does innovation look like in this community, and you know, where's it going, what forms will it take, and so it was really neat hearing seeing the engagement from those individuals and seeing what they're and hearing about their stories as well.
Well, for me, one of the big takeaways that I had was just really the power of the grassroots and the power of bringing people together to solve problems and to share best practices, to share what works and build those lasting connections. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, this is really an organization that's about people. And when you think about solving national security innovation challenges, whether it's through DEF or whether it's more broadly, at the end of the day, it comes back to people, and people have to solve problems. Technology, you know, it's only going to be as good as the people. So for me, you know, a big takeaway was just the involvement of the group and the dedication of the people that were involved. And, you know, I think that's the type of commitment that's going to help solve even bigger challenges.
Well, Josh, Brett, this was great. Hopefully we'll all make it to DEF in 2017. With Avasens On The Record podcast, I'm August Cole, and tune in next time.
You've been listening to Avasens On The Record. To learn more about Avasens, go to avasens.com or follow us on Twitter at @avasens.